Welcome to BDO To Go, casual industry conversation brought to you by the restaurant industry professionals at BDO. The constantly evolving landscape of the industry forces operators and owners to adapt quickly and maintain a keen awareness of consumer and economic shifts. Understanding these business impacts and insights is key to the continued success and resilience of the restaurant industry. That's why we crafted our new BDO To Go podcast series, a monthly podcast that you can take to go.
Welcome back, and thank you for joining us for another episode of BDO To Go. My name is Greg Thomas, and I'm co-lead of BDO's National Restaurant Industry Group and your host today. Today, we'll be discussing a few larger industry trends in advance of the Restaurant Finance and Development Conference that's coming up soon in November. Joining me today is a very familiar face, Mary Jo Larson. Mary Jo is Vice President of Franchise Times Corp and publisher of the company's two publications, Restaurant Finance Modeler and Franchise Times Magazine. She works with both the editorial and sales side of the business. And now a little bit about Franchise Times and the Monitor. So since 1988, Restaurant Finance Modeler has been circulated to senior executives in the restaurant finance, franchising, and real estate industries, with an emphasis on topics such as public offerings, finance sources, analyst stock recommendations, and taxes. It holds its annual Restaurant Finance and Development Conference, which we all know is RFDC, in November each year, as I mentioned earlier, which brings together multi-unit restaurant operators with banks, lenders, and other financial intermediaries, as well as executives from the real estate sector. And my personal note, it is the go-to conference of the year. So welcome to the podcast, Mary Jo.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. Very glad to be here and appreciate you asking me.
All right, so let's get started with some interesting trends that we're seeing. So first question, most likely the biggest trend or certainly buzzword in the industry today is the drive to create quote-unquote value in the minds of guests. In certain segments of the industry, this value, I think, means price. And in others, it means experience or the offerings. Mary Jo, how have you seen the whole value exercise evolve this year? And where do you think it's headed as we move closer to 2026?
Yeah, value, that is a good question. You know, QSR has always been known for value, and that's because it's price-driven and it's seeking to serve probably a lower-income consumer. And today, that consumer is going through the drive-thru and, you know, they're getting a little sticker shock. And we're seeing casual dining coming in and taking advantage of that. There's one, you know, well-known casual diner that has a $10.99 meal deal, burger deal. And so you're seeing that on value, maybe some of the legacy QSR brands are under-delivering. And now casual dining is over-delivering, which, come on, I mean, a few years ago, we would have written off casual dining. So that's very interesting that that's happening. And the quality, you know, when we talk about value and we talk about it includes quality. And if they don't get that, I think the consumer is going to stay at home. We have a columnist in the Restaurant Finance Monitor, Jim McFadden, who writes about economic issues. And specifically in one of our latest issues, he was talking about the pizza trajectory. And frozen pizza. And frozen pizza sales go up when there's a recession or when there's some sort of downturn. And they're estimating now that frozen pizza sales are going to go up by 400 million next year. So, you know, really for the consumer, you've got to have that value and you have to have the quality as well.
It's funny you bring up the pizzas. I was in the grocery store recently going through the frozen food section, and I had never noticed it before, but the number of brands of frozen pizza absolutely astounded me. So hearing that, I was looking, I'm wondering, why would you buy a frozen pizza when basically with all the discounts and everything going on, I'm assuming you can get a fresh pizza for relatively the same price, but apparently not.
Well, and I think if you go through there, I know my husband loves frozen pizza and he's been guilty of coming home with two for whatever, two for, you know, $10, two for what, or three for $10, or all these combinations at the grocery store. So I just think, you know, and you can get a pretty good frozen pizza. So I think if people aren't experiencing that value in restaurants, they're going to eat at home.
Yeah, I was just talking with a client yesterday that's CEO of a kind of a quasi fast casual QSR concept. And he was trying to make the case that, you know, his demographic, his guests are really in that 50%, the 50% and below, right? And maybe the bottom 25% have fallen out of the restaurant space right now. But he was trying to contend that, you know, they've all been driven to third party delivery. And any in-store sales that he's seeing are being driven more by franchisor deep discount promotions. So it almost seems to me now that the whole term value is in a certain part of the population, it should just be replaced by discount. But I mean, what do you think about that?
Well, I think discounting is hard for franchisees. We can drive traffic all we want, but that's great for the franchisor, but not so great for franchisees if they're not going to make any money and their costs are up. So it's hard.
And so do you think you're going to continue to see this trend, this discounting, this move to third-party delivery? And then, like you said, maybe the switch off to more frozen foods or in grocery store foods. Do you think that's going to continue into 2026, or is it highly dependent on what happens with the recession or stock market or the interest rates?
I think we're going to continue to see that value. I think even if interest rates are lowered, I think that's going to maybe put a little bit more money in the pocket of consumers. But I think the value, they're still going to expect value. They've had sticker shock for a while now.
Yeah, they certainly have. And it was interesting to see that real wage growth or household income growth for the first time in a long time in July exceeded the inflation index. So hopefully that's something that we see continue.
Yes.
Well, let's move on. So, you know, I think there's a trend that we've all picked up on that continues to flourish, and that's the growing number of multi-unit, multi-brand operators. And I think I know you didn't coin the term, but it's the first time I'd heard it when we talked previously, Mumbles. And I looked at, you know, one of the top 200 publications recently, and 62% of the top 200 restaurant franchisees are Mumbles. With most of the top 20 owning three or more brands. And that, I hadn't really looked at that before, but that really kind of surprised me, because that 62%, it's not just three brands. It's four, five, six, and seven brands. And one of the recent groups that we talked to has 18 brands, which is insane. But are you seeing this as a trend, not just in the restaurant industry, but throughout the franchising industry?
Oh, yeah. People are crossing industries. So restaurant owners are maybe starting out with a restaurant and a restaurant brand, and then they're crossing into other industries. We just wrote about one yesterday in one of our e-newsletters that went out of a family business, their family of franchisees, and they have a chicken brand, a cookie brand, and they have a fitness brand, and they just signed a development agreement for a multi-unit development of a retail technology resale business franchise. Wow. So yeah, totally a left turn there, right? And the franchisee mentioned in the article, the labor, you know, they just didn't need as many people, smaller startup costs, the real estate was easier because it was in line. So yeah, I think we're going to see as restaurant owners and all franchise owners, they're going to be looking for those kind of things now, especially the experienced ones. They know what they want to do.
So, and I think I agree with you on a couple of those comments about the real estate's easier. You know, I read an article recently about all the drugstores that have closed and how they're pretty much in high demand because they're great locations, you know,
right,
corner of Main and Main. And because of the way they were built, they can easily be transitioned into a non drugstore type brand, I guess. And also in the labor, you know, as we talk about what's driving this crossover, we did work with a large fitness company, a very well-known fitness company, they have like two or three or four people, and that was it. And the fees were coming in on the credit card. So we're going to see that continue though in the 26 and beyond, right? And
Oh yeah. You know, and at Franchise Times, fitness has, you know, we do a lot on restaurants because we have a restaurant finance monitor, and restaurants are the largest sector of franchising. But we're starting to really make a push into fitness and covering fitness more in fitness finance. And because it's become so big, and a lot of the lenders are going over that way. So a lot of the restaurant lenders are starting to finance fitness. And so these franchisees have access to capital too. And they're liking what you said, that membership model, that predictable cash flow. I mean, that membership model is great. I'm always going to go to the gym tomorrow, right? Never going to cancel the membership because I'm going to go tomorrow.
Do you think that these franchisees, these operators are following their consumer, their guest in other areas of their life? I had a CEO say that to me, that you can't be going after where the guest has been since COVID. You need to be going towards where they're going, which to me, this crossover sounds like it could be that.
I know that franchisee that we wrote about mentioned that being in their community with all these different brands, they're in one community, but they're filling the need of their consumers in that community. So I would agree with that.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's talk about the lending environment. The lending environment has really been very tough now for over a year. And I think it's more about, you know, when you talk, at least when I talk to the various lenders that I know, they're doing more, I guess, refreshes, more refinances, that type of thing versus new deals. I know M&A activity has been down, but with the rates where they are, I know a lot of operators just kind of sat back and said, I'm just waiting. I'm not going to go for this. And when you add on top of it, though, that there's a franchisor requirement for new store development and inner development agreements. And a lot of groups are owned now by private equity who firsthand experience do drive growth development or growth development, do drive development pretty actively. It's kind of sets up a scenario where there's a lot of pressure on franchisees to build out. And yet with the lending environment where it is, it's awfully difficult to do that. So are you seeing any trends in the franchise or franchisee relationships where there's unusual pressure being put on the franchisees to complete their development agreements or have them taken away? Or is there anything new to talk about in that area?
Well, I do think that it's difficult right now for franchisees. If they're in a development agreement that where they have to build, I mean, construction costs are really onerous, and there's a limit on available real estate out there. So I think it's really hard, but PE and franchisors like growth. That's what they push for. And sometimes growth for growth's sake, because, you know, PE has a financial incentive. They want to sell it off later. And the franchisors, they make money on their top line. And I think, you know, good franchisors are not pushing growth just to have growth. I had mentioned to you that I had talked to this CFO of a very under the radar coffee chain, mm-hmm. who, when I say under the radar, there's a lot of press about some of these other up and coming brands. And this is one that you just don't hear about that often, but their AUVs are really good. And they were trying to help the owner and the founder with an exit. And so they went to PE and some PE firms and talked to them. And the CFO told me, you know, they wanted them to grow faster than they were growing at the time. And then also they wanted to have them charge their franchisees more fees to make money and or to offset costs. And they finally declined going with private equity, and they went another way because they didn't want to charge their franchisees more fees. And the rate of growth, opening a few a year was fine. And they liked that pace of growth. They could keep up with it. And that was successful for them. And it was good for their franchisees. They didn't want to rock the boat with their franchisees. The franchisees were making money. So I think franchisors, the good ones are looking to make sure that their franchisees can do that growth without having it be tough on their bottom line.
I think I'd echo that, as well as noting that there are a number of franchisors out there that I've heard about or experienced with some of our client base that are being more amenable to development agreements, understanding the situation we're in right now. So yeah, I think that if you see one that's really pressing the gas on trying to get development going, it's a huge warning sign. So, okay. Well, another trend that we've certainly seen over the last couple of years is a proliferation of small box concepts, most notably in the coffee segment, as you just mentioned, where I was surprised to read this. We now have 25 coffee brands, at least brands that have been identified in the top 500. We've seen many established brands experiment with drive-up only or reduced seating layouts, trying to position in the fast casual space. Do you think these brands are reacting to market shifts or other environmental changes? And then what strategies are you seeing these new entrants using to gain traction?
Yes, I think that they're responding to a variety of things. So first of all, the consumer wants fast. And if we're looking at these coffee chains, their market is a lot of times Gen Z, you know, maybe some millennials and younger millennials and Gen Z, and they want things fast. They want things different. They like different and new and exciting. And I want it different. I want it fast. I want it cool. They're maximizing that drive-through, so you can get through there. Somebody was telling me in one of the coffee chains they went through, and it was under a minute to get their order. So that was amazing. And there's a hamburger player out there right now that has a similar layout, and they're bringing in those containers mm-hmm. on some of them. And so that's the answer to high construction costs and real estate. You put the pad on and then you just bring the container in. And so think of all the construction costs you're saving, the time to open, which is, you know, time is money when you're trying to open a spot. So they're responding to that. And I think it's really creative and it's working for them.
Well, let's see where we are 2, 3, 4, 5 years from now and whether this is just a fad, yep. You know, and hopefully not the death of casual dining going forward. But it just seems like everybody wants to get into these drive up only, you know, or walk up only. In certain parts of the country, the weather supports that. I know the one you're talking about, I don't think they had a covered patio necessarily built into their footprint yet. But up here in Detroit, where it kind of gets cold, it would be kind of difficult. But I'm sure they'll solve that. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, one more question before we wrap it up. And I this is something that I've certainly been seeing more and more of this year, and that's international players. You know, we're seeing more and more international brands. And not just from, let's say, the UK or English-speaking countries. And we're seeing it from South America. I think I saw one from Portugal. I saw a coffee shop from South America, which was interesting. But these international brands seeking to enter the U.S. market, and they might have a number of stores of a different brand or the same brand in their home countries, and they're seeing the U.S. market is I think, pretty ripe. So I don't know if you're seeing the same thing too, Mary Jo, but if you are, what do you think is driving this, particularly in the chicken segment, to come to the U.S.?
Yeah, I think basically, as far as chicken goes, they're seeing the success that these chicken brands are having, the U.S.-based chicken brands are having here. And I think that that's easy. Let's go there. People like chicken. As far as the other brands go, I think basically they have a built-in consumer who are used to franchise brands. They're accepting of it. And I think people want and seek different. Again, as we were talking about, we all want to try something new and different. And I think that's what they're bringing to the table.
Very interesting. I'll have to watch how that plays out here. And I'm not sure if that's a topic at all at RFDC, but I'll be listening. So, well, Mary Jo, thank you for joining me today. It's always great to catch up with you and chat about trends in the industry and just chat about the industry in general. So,
it was great.
Looking forward to seeing you live in Vegas in 2 months. Anything else you want to add?
I don't think so, but really appreciate you having me today. Really fun. Enjoyed it.
And to our listeners, I hope that you found some opportunities in our conversation and the great insights that Mary Jo brings to the world of franchising and restaurants. As always, feel free to contact us with any questions that you might have. And until next time, cheers.
Thank you for listening to BDO To Go. Past episodes and related insights are available at bdo.com/BDO To Go. Or you can go to iTunes or Spotify to rate, review, share, or subscribe to this podcast. The views expressed by our guests do not necessarily reflect the views of BDO. For more information on BDO's restaurant industry practice and the resources we provide, visit www.bdo.com/restaurants.